Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30s. Today's show, we have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, Gold Star families have been getting the financial shaft for a long time. A new law will right some of those wrongs just a little bit. Round number two, because of the all-women National Guard at command, Bears will be flocking to Maryland. It's a Tuesday show after all. Happy period Tuesday, everyone. Round number three, an interview with Anu Bagwadi about her role as an activist and being a Marine Corps martial arts instructor. Round number four, some airmen were heroes in Poland after helping rescue a van that had flipped over. First Lieutenant Moto was ready to pounce like the fly, fight, win version of longtime Stoolie Tigger from the 100 Acre Woods.
Oh, longtime Stoolie, brick by brick Tigger.
Round number five, the Commandant is changing the rules for our beloved Marine Corps hymn. We must now sing it loud and proud. We'll get my thoughts, Kate's thoughts, and Khan's thoughts about we haven't been singing it for generations now. I've always thought it was kind of strange. All of that today is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Roman. Because, Brent, let me ask you a question. We'll start off with you. What do you usually think about when you're so horny that you don't want to come too fast? What do you usually think about? Is there anything that you usually think about in that moment?
Yeah, that I'm banging somebody else.
Banging someone else. Cons?
I don't have this problem.
Come on. Kate?
Margaret Thatcher naked. Oh, fuck. There's a scene in Austin Powers where he's trying not to come. So he's like, Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day. Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day. And I just totally bombed it. So, yeah, I think about Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day.
There we go. I usually think about nothing. I don't have that problem, just like Cons. The folks at Romans have built an online health company, and they are changing the name with Roman Swipes. The secret is the better, longer sex is with Roman Swipes. Roman Swipes are convenient over-the-counter wipes that are clinically proven to help you last longer. They're effective, doctor-approved, easy to use, and fast-acting. Sounds too good to be true, right, Bryn?
Right.
Well, the swipes are the real deal. Study has shown up to a 340% increase in stamina after 3 months of use. Roman Swipes will ship to you in a discreet, unmarked package, and each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet. What makes swipes better than all those creams and foams out there is the desensitizing effect that will not transfer to your partner or numb you. And they're super easy to use, right, Bren?
Right.
Just like the swipes out of your pocket. Wipe in your most sensitive areas and wait a few minutes, and that's it. Go to getroman.com/zero to get yours. Keep them in your back pocket. This time you're going to get free 2-day shipping by visiting getroman.com/zero. What do we got, Kate?
Yeah, so I know you all will be listening to it on the second, but first I have to say I goofed you all pretty good this morning when I said, hey, I'm not going to be able to make the show today, April Fools. And you guys were all like, what? And it was pretty mind-blowing. So we went on the Zero Blog 30 Twitter, and we asked, what's one of the best pranks that ever got pulled on you or that you pulled on someone when you were on active duty or in the military? So got a few good answers on this. At Razzhole says, a few days before boot camp graduation, we had an all-hands call with the ship's officer. He told us that we would not get any liberty after graduation, and we would be headed to different ships because Russia had declared war on the U.S.
Jesus, that's intense.
Oh, that's a dark one.
That's a little much. One. Gosh.
What officer was like, oh, I got a great idea. Let's make these poor kids think that they're going to fucking Russia immediately. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I still would laugh if I was watching their faces. I'd probably enjoy that. At Boring Dad Derek, you're a great, exciting dad. After the newest boots got to the barracks after finishing basic training, we would tell lies like, you have to bring your mattress down to the NEX to be stenciled with your name. Most laughed. Some would drag their, I'm assuming some actually dragged their mattresses thinking they really did have to get stenciled.
I mean, that's believable. I like that one.
Yeah, I can see it.
So that's your mattress that you have to take everywhere?
Yeah. Well, you know, just drag your
mattresses, but this one is mine.
At CW242 said, as an NUB, as a nub on my boat's submarine, we had to identify all fire hoses for a qualification. I was told that I had to find a certain MM2 for hose number 9. There were only 8 hoses. So they had this guy looking for a part for this hose that didn't exist. That's like, for us, it was like, somebody better get me a box of grid squares right now. Somebody better find the keys to the Humvee. Uh-huh. And people would fall for it all the time. at Ocho Fisho said worked as a disbursing clerk and wrote up a memo on Navy Federal letterhead that said rendering all accounts closed and unable to get funds. So making people think they couldn't access their money. Hilarious. What's more funny than that? Another guy said tying dead camel spiders to door handles. So whenever someone opened one overseas, they would think there was a camel spider. I would shit my pants.
But that's not like an April Fool's prank. That's just a prank. That's not April Fool's. You can't be like, April Fool's, there's not really a camel spider on the door. Like, that's...
Oh, yeah. I was just asking for pranks in general. Because of the spirit of April Fool's Day. Yeah. So, again, keys to the Humvee. This guy, at Love to Jacket, said, once talked a member into going to ask for an airplane tampon from the only female supervisor in maintenance. I don't get it.
But over the fact that his name is Love to Jacket.
Oh, my God. He got me.
He hates the jacket.
He loves the jacket. I was like, why does he love his jacket? Wow, he got me good because I didn't get it.
It took me so long. Do you remember when Blink-182 dropped their album, Take Off Your Shirt and Jacket? Or Take Off Your Pants and Jacket?
Yeah.
It took me, people were like, that's a crazy name. I was like, why? Like, he's just getting, I was like, oh.
Oh my God.
It took me 25 years to realize that.
Really?
It took me till literally right now.
Just right now.
Same here. Wow. I never put that together before.
Wow. Whoa. I thought you guys were going to clown me, but it turns out that you're the idiots. My two April Fool's joke today, McCartney came downstairs. She's like, it's April Fool's, right? She's been looking forward to it so much. And I was like, yeah. She was like, my April Fool's is. And she was like, are you ready, Dad? And I was just sitting there drinking a cup of coffee. I was like, yeah, I'm ready. She's like, Daddy doesn't have diarrhea. April Fool's.
Roasted.
She knows you so well.
Yeah, she
That's
does.
Fantastic.
And my favorite one from boot camp, because I went from February to May, was our senior drill instructor came out the morning of April Fool's. Everybody gets online. You're saying you had just woke up. You had your Blue Money valuable bag like out in front and shit like that. And he says, all right, I have an announcement to make. None of you are pussies. April Fool's.
That's very good.
That is good. I think the best one of this whole bunch is that you're going to war with Russia. I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like that. Only reason I would want to be a top commander is specifically for April Fool's Day to make people think they're about to like super
die.
Is that wrong? Hey, yeah. Anyways.
Maybe it's a little problematic. I don't know.
All right. Well, you know.
Yeah, a little Russia goofing never hurt anybody. Russia's probably the last. I watched this documentary this weekend on Siberia, and Siberia is not a place I would ever want to fight. Turns out it gets super cold there.
Very cold.
So I've heard.
And that their permafrost is defrosting now.
Oh, wow. No.
So it's doing, because their permafrost is defrosting, imagine going to war here. You're not allowed to, because if you guys remember correctly, whenever you're doing like stalking training or you're doing anything like that, you're not allowed to wear bug spray of any kind. Like, because it, like the scent can flow downwind, like an enemy can pick up on it or whatever. They have prehistoric sized mosquitoes that are popping up all over the place. That could be like, some of them are as big as like a thumb, the mosquitoes.
It's like Jumanji type.
And they're popping up all over the place in Siberia. No thanks. I would be a conscious objector to that war in a heartbeat. Just I don't want to walk on anything that was called permafrost, and I don't want to get attacked by the, you know how big a welt, how itchy that must be?
If you get bit
by one of those?
Five bites from one of those and you'd need like a blood transfusion. They would take so much blood from you. Yeah, no, hard pass. This is why I have an uncle who goes hunting in like Alaska in the spring, and you watch the videos and everything's just covered in fucking mosquitoes and flies and bugs. No thanks. I'll stay right here in New York.
That's true. All right, let's get into the actual topics. We'll start with round one. Round one, Gold Star spouses can lose financial assistance if they remarry, but veteran Congress hope to change that. This is coming courtesy from our friends at Task and Purpose. When Sergeant First Class Ofrin Archega, is that how you say that?
Yep.
was killed in Afghanistan in 2011. His wife, Sienna, vowed to follow up the plan that the couple had for their family. She will remain a stay-at-home mom to raise their son, who's now 11. She continues to do that thanks to compensation and health benefits provided to widows and widowers of service members who die in the line of duty. Sienna was just 22 years old when her husband dies, and she continues to grieve. She doesn't date, though, but not simply out of respect for Ofrin. She says she doesn't see the point because dating could lead to marriage, and if she marries before she turns 55, she would lose thousands of dollars a month because of a law that would stop her annuity payments when she tied the knot. I think that that is so terrible to somebody who's already lost so much to know financially that you can't even go out and find somebody to begin that healing process with. Mm-hmm. Because that's something that you, I mean, people want to be in a relationship that they feel is going to be fruitful, you know?
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah. And you want to share your life with someone, you know, potentially besides just your child. So that is really terrible to think you're hamstrung like that. Like, oh, I can't go date because God forbid I meet someone that I really enjoy spending time with.
I want to say too, I've followed Shauna on Twitter for a long time now, and for years actually. So when I saw her pop up in this article, because she's always been a big proponent for Gold Star families and everything, and she has a son that she's taking care of. And every year for the last few years, seeing her post pictures of him and knowing that she's doing it on her own, and I never until now realizing that, like, just not, I think it's a huge part of, not that she, maybe she doesn't want to, but a huge part of moving on for people eventually and what their spouse would probably want is for them to find love again and for them to find that thing.
Especially
so, I mean,
at the age of 22.
Yeah, you got, you know, your entire life, a very long life ahead of you. So to just not even have the prospect of spending that with someone is very daunting.
Just to, if you want a perspective, I mean, you can follow her on Twitter. I'll retweet her later today if people want to see. But the morning of March 30th, 2011, I met my CAO. Reality wasn't on my radar, but I was packing a bag to go to Dover Air Force Base because Ofrin was coming home. It wasn't the homecoming we planned, but it was the one we got. He landed March 31st. So this is the anniversary right now. As this Gold Star, I believe it was in Nevada, they had a big Gold Star organization meetup this past weekend, and that's where they were discussing these kinds of things and that bill and everything. But just following her as she continues to grieve, that was 2011, and you can tell she's still just so gutted, and I don't blame her over the whole thing. And I think that would be a huge help, and it's insane to me that I never knew that they couldn't remarry or else they lose their...
I didn't know that either. And it's interesting because, you know, one of the arguments that it's made is that, you know, it's strictly a financial thing. So if they remarry, presumably that new spouse should be able to financially support them. And I was thinking about that point, and it kind of struck me that you could have that thought, because no amount of money is ever going to, like, heal the wound ultimately that you lost your loved one. So to take that away just seems ridiculous to me, to take that away, that people could feel like, oh, well, this is just strictly about money. It's not about money. I think it's more than just the check you get every month. It's the fact that there's maybe some comfort in knowing that you can be taken care of to an extent for the rest of your life. And certainly the children of a fallen service member deserve to receive that payment. And it doesn't stop at a certain age, right? Do you get it the rest of your life? I don't know.
For the kids, it stops at 21 or whenever you're like in the, like you're no longer in college.
Okay.
Child care, not only that, but child care assistance, they don't get that. They aren't allowed to go to the commissary right now or exchange centers or fitness centers with those dependent. Whenever they remarry, they lose all their base access. It's almost like, because you got remarried, that entire portion of your life is taken away, which is wrong. That's not what we intend to do. And I think one of the byproducts of this, a good thing of having a lot more veterans who are our age and a little bit older than us in Congress now, is that they're seeing some of these things in real life. Because for a long time, there was that gap from essentially Vietnam mm-hmm. to the Iraq War, certainly with things thrown in like Kosovo and Beirut, and you also had Somalia and things like that. You had different battles, but it wasn't a large-scale war like now. Even Desert Shield and Desert Storm wasn't the same as it is now. Now that we have all these people who are going to represent in Congress, they're seeing their soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who are actively suffering or going through this, so they can make changes that have needed to take place for a long time. One of the interesting stories that I thought came from this was retired Chief Warrant Officer 3, Joe Kent, who lost his wife, who was Navy Senior Chief, and the crypto technician, Shannon Kent. We talked about her whenever she passed away a couple months ago in January after a suicide bomb attack in January. He said that although he gets it because he's a retired Chief Warrant Officer, that he's seen some of the other people who he now can commiserate with as a Gold Star family. He said if a woman remarries, the guy that she marries is responsible for her now. That's what the DOD has probably said in the past. And right. It's like something straight out of the 1950s. If you look at the stats, most of the women and men who are widowed are in their early 20s. So you're telling a young lady, maybe with a kid or two, that she's going to be financially penalized. It's just not the right thing to do. And I'm glad that Seth Moulton's involved with it. Some of the people that have been on this show before are involved with it. So I'm glad that they're getting that taken care of.
It's like saying, oh, you remarried. Okay, you're healed now. You're good. We're going to stop paying you. And that's just not the case. Like, you're going to live with that the rest of your life that you lost that spouse. So,
well, it's also highly sexist. Like it right. says, it's it assumes it's a woman and assumes that a man will take right. care of her as soon as she's married, which is bullshit.
Why would anyone vote against this?
I don't think they will. I looked at the list, the House resolution, and it's pretty bipartisan across the board. I think this will go through sweeping. It'll be one of those very few things that happens that everybody's like, yeah, this makes sense. This makes sense. Probably Rand Paul will fucking vote against it.
Probably. He'll we find need some money reason. For the Afghanistan bonus for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that's crazy about survivor benefits, this bill would get rid of this too. It includes a provision to cover the cost of transporting the bodies of those killed in action to their hometowns for services and later to a national cemetery if the family requests it. Currently, the government only pays for one trip. I mean, we spend so much money on the military to be nickel and diming about where we send our fallen so they can have a proper burial.
So, Chaps, explain that just a little further when you say one trip.
So whenever somebody's killed in action, say, for instance, you're killed in Afghanistan, what happens is that your body is draped in a flag and you are flown usually to Dover, Delaware. I mean, 99% of the time it goes to Dover, Delaware. And then the family gets to pick which location it'll go in, a follow-on location from Delaware. So I'll use my friend Chris Diaz, for example. When Chris was sent home to his family, he went from Dover, Delaware to El Paso, where his family lived and where he was going to be buried in a national cemetery in El Paso. Well, if Chris had designated on his will before he went to combat that he wanted to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery, like I did whenever I went, I said that if I die in action, I want to go to Arlington, then his family would have to pay for his body to be transported from El Paso to Arlington National Cemetery. What this bill is going to say is that you can have your funeral with your body present wherever you're from. And then if you want to go to Arlington or one of the other big national cemeteries where veterans are laid to rest, then we'll pay for that as well. I think that's a fucking no-brainer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, can you imagine, dude, like having, you're going through all this stuff and you know your son or daughter wants to be buried at Arlington, but you're from fucking Florida, you're from California, and then you have to decide in the little bit of money that you get, like that's going to possibly go to a kids or family, to take some of that out of pocket. I mean, that can't be a cheap flight either.
No, I've never had to go through this.
It's not like you're fucking throwing them on Spirit Airline or some shit.
Right. That's definitely very expensive. And then you just think about, you know, what it would cost for everyone to travel if you only would not pay for that trip and then to just come to a memorial service. So it's
what this whole bill comes down to. And I think overall what military and veteran affairs, just do the fucking right thing.
Right.
This type of stuff shouldn't be that hard. If you lose a spouse, you should get those essentially what amounts to a retirement check for the rest of your natural life, if that's your spouse. Mm-hmm. If it's your kid, it should be 21 years old or until you graduate college and you're able to stand on your own financially. You should have base access and commissary access and ability to go to TRICARE related appointments on base or out in town for the rest of your natural life and pay just the TRICARE amount, which is like $580 a year. That's it. Simple, done deal. Do the right thing. Fuck the government. Let's move on to round two.
All right, move aside, gentlemen. We've got round two coming in hot. For the first time, a state's National Guard command staff is entirely female. The Maryland National Guard's four top leaders are all women, mothers, and three are African-American. Major General Linda L. Singh has been the highest-ranking commander of the state's military since 2015, and she's the first African-American and first woman to serve as adjutant general in the state. Now, in June, bear with me here, this is a lot of lady general names, which we're not used to. In June, then, Brigadier General Janine L. Brickhead became Assistant Adjutant General for Army Brigadier General April Vogel, and in August, she served as an Assistant Adjutant General for Air Command Sergeant Perlissa D. Wilson, who became Senior Enlisted Advisor in December. So, yeah, my mind was blown there, not only because that's just a really confusing sentence with a lot of weird billets, but again, not used to hearing that many lady names in a clump in such a high-ranking manner. So I think that's pretty awesome. Also, if you're a man who lives in the state of Maryland, Maryland National Guard, lady coup happening. You might want to watch yourself. I'm just saying.
I'd be minding my P's and Q's. Minding my P's and Q's.
Crab cakes and football move aside. And Singh says it wasn't intentional. She just wanted the most qualified candidates available. And no surprise, losers. It happened to be people with vaginas. So take that. Quick round, just wanted to shove it in your faces.
Yeah, big time on. We actually talked about that a little bit with the commandant, with the new commandant that's being named. Like, it's time that we have a little more diversity in the group. I mean, if you go to Wikipedia and you go to the commandant page, every single person, and you could say this phrase, has a swinging dick, and it's a white dick. Every single one.
That was so surprising.
Yeah, chaps, you don't know that. There could be all sorts of discolorations.
That's true. I assumed dick color there, and I apologize. Right.
Don't assume dick color.
You could have a nice strawberry dick.
Yeah, but no, I just think that's cool. I think more and more, it's been slow coming, but I think that will be something more common that eventually my hope is that it won't be news.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Kate, like, just the other side, I think this is awesome, but like, hopefully it gets to the point where this isn't news anymore, right? It just becomes like, oh, this is just, those were the people who were qualified for the job. That's so they got the job. We don't have to make a whole story about it's all the first women for the first time. So hopefully, I think that those wheels, although they're maybe not moving at the speed you like, I think they're moving faster than you realize.
And those wheels are moving courtesy of people like Anu Bagwadi, who we have as a guest and interviewer. She wrote a book called Unbecoming. Make sure you get that at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you find your book. Here is Marine Captain Anu Bagwadi.
So congratulations to Anuradha Bagwadi on your book coming out just yesterday.
Thank you.
Yes, that's awesome. So it's been a whirlwind week. We're excited for you to join us because we're falling among the ranks of people you've been talking to, such as the Today Show. You had an opening at the Strand Bookstore, one of my favorite bookstores in all of New York City. You're making the round. So thanks again for taking time to stop by Zero Blog 30 on this week that your book comes out, which is so cool. But you wrote Unbecoming, a memoir of disobedience, and you wrote this book for women and girls so that they may feel less alone or hurt in the world, and for the men and boys who love them. Do you mind giving a little bit of a background? What led you to the Marines and to this point where you have ended up writing a memoir about your experience?
Well, thanks so much for having me. I wrote this book in part because I felt like I had to get something out of my system, you know, so there was something selfish there for me, but mostly it was this feeling that, you know, when I had grown up, I didn't have the support I needed as a girl in the world. And also I grew up in a strict Indian immigrant household. And so there were a lot of expectations put on me to succeed in a very specific way. You know, I had academic parents and education was really important. And it is in a lot of families, but I didn't have any siblings to kind of spread the stress. And so it was all on me, eyes were on me to do certain things. And I didn't have a voice growing up. I had really controlling parents and especially my dad. And so I didn't even know what I wanted to do in the world, like who I was, what I was all about. And I remember when I kind of heard about the Marines and, you know, I lit up. I was so excited that there was this organization out there that seemed larger than life. And, you know, I could push my physical and mental limits and I'd be treated, I thought, the same, you know, as everybody else. I'd be treated harshly, you know, and I could see
right. Everybody's treated like a piece of shit.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, the book comes out of that experience. And, you know, the title itself is, I'm very familiar to military folks, right, but military justice term, right? Conduct Unbecoming. And I wanted to play with that because clearly my book is about meeting with, working with folks who were engaged in just awful behavior towards their fellow Marines. And
yeah, that, so like you're saying, you had this vision in your head, and it was the same thing for me. You see the commercials, you're wearing the dress blues, you're slaying the dragon, you're so honorable, the long line of the perfect crisp uniforms. And I was, it's shocking when you finally hit the fleet and you're like, oh, this is not the commercial. This is not the perfect world that you thought it was. Can you give some examples of what you're talking about here?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it started even before hitting the fleet. It was an OCS. It was, you know, at the basic training level. I was really confounded that men and women were trained in separate units. Like, I did not understand this gender segregation, because, you know, we had some serious athletes in my platoon, and I was one of them. And well, you know, all my DIs, I mean, DIs are kind of amazing and formidable no matter what. They were just scary, right? They're terrifying. Right. But I remember doing my first PFT, and we were thrown in with the guys. It was just a company run, and I was accused of cheating on the PFT. We did three loops around the base, and they thought I had just done two loops. And, you know, I was a fast runner at the time, and so, you know, you don't argue with your DI, you know, whatever, yes sir. And
right.
I was ordered to see my commanding officer, and she had to kind of do the research.
So let's talk about how fast this was, because I need to know.
It wasn't even all that fast. It was about 20 minutes. You know, it was a good solid PFT, right? But
and you're not going to get into OCS if you're not. If that had another lap, that would be 27 minutes.
They thought that was normal, right? This kind of like, women are weak, women are slow, women can't do pull-ups, women blah, blah, blah. And so I was not just proving them wrong, but, you know, you had to go out of your way to prove them wrong. And so pull-ups weren't even encouraged, right? My drill instructor, who's a legend, Brenda Boffman was her name at the time, bright red hair. Like, she still terrifies me thinking about her. Like, her ghost will haunt me. But, you know, she would get us on the pull-up bar and demand we did pull-ups. And a lot of the women who were in my platoon were kind of confused. Like, their recruiters hadn't made them do that, right? And so who was this drill instructor? Like, the audacity of her to demand pull-ups when I haven't trained to do pull-ups. And sure enough, you know, we realized, I remember Boffman sat us down one day. It was, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks in. Like, you have to train to do 20 pull-ups. If you want respect, this is what you need to do. And I just loved her on that day. You know, I thought, this woman gets it. She gets what will happen to you if you don't do the same thing as the guys, and oftentimes do better than the guys, right? That's what you need to try to do.
Right.
Yeah. I found a lot of times it built resentment amongst the guys, because I would do something small that was like, kind of, I was an athlete too, and I would get like, oh, wow. Whereas they were doing the same thing, but getting nothing, because they didn't expect anything from me. So all I had to do was like the tiniest little thing. And it was seen as like being an exceptional Marine when the guys were like, well, we're doing the same thing, but it's because the leadership just didn't expect much of me. And so it was surprising to them when I was succeeding and doing well, you know. It's kind of like such a weird thing.
It was crazy. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, a former president once said, I love this line, but it's the soft bigotry of low expectations, right? So, you know, you expect nothing of women in the Marines. It's discriminatory behavior at the end of the day. And many women I met, both officer and enlisted, would then try a little less hard sometimes, like, not just unconsciously, right? So like, if you're given more time on an O course, for example, well, you have more time to catch your breath, like, and your body knows it. I remember catching my breath. I didn't need to, but I did, right? And so it hurts everybody across the board.
I agree. And I think it also builds a sense of resentment a lot of times for male Marines against the women Marines, because if you are a male Marine and you're running 18-minute or 19-minute 3-mile, and then your counterpart is running 21:15, and she gets a better score than you on your PFT, that culture of not having the same standard across the board is toxic. And that's what I think, that's a large reason why, especially amongst junior troops, you have this almost sort of resentment from the get-go.
Absolutely, I agree. I mean, it's natural, right? When we don't talk about it enough, kind of as an organization, it's just not talked about. Like, God forbid you have the same standards for men and women across the board. And the resentment is palpable.
We talked about it about the Air Force. They almost did it. They were so close to making gender neutral PT standards now, but they're using science and like all kinds of oxygen numbers and waist measurements and things like that. Not actually, it shouldn't be rocket science to say run 3 miles in 20 minutes and that's a perfect score.
I agree. And there's like this pull-up nonsense that's happened where it's optional now. Like, and women are meeting the bar, the low bar that's been set. So I actually don't even know the exact numbers today, but I know that seven pull-ups was perfect at some point in the last year, you know, was a perfect score. And then women were doing 7 pull-ups and then 10 pull-ups. And so like, if you set the standard, women will meet it, right? And so now it's creeping towards 20. I'm sure it will be at some point in our lifetimes, but you know, like why do we set the bar so low?
And it's not just with the physical stuff. I mean, that this is, I think, an easy example to give because people can visualize it, but there's so many other things that are uneven. And when you got out in 2004, you made a vow to take this on. And you said part of it was that you said, I knew the system could not be changed from the inside because I had tried. So I tried to change it from the outside. And that includes women being allowed to serve in combat roles, among other things. What made you, because it takes a lot of, I would say, bravery. It's not the friendliest environment when you decide to speak up and say, hey, especially as a woman in the Marine Corps of all places, and especially as a woman of color in the Marine Corps, what gave you the drive to, why'd you do that to yourself?
Why did I make myself a target? You know, when I was a lieutenant and then a captain, I was a company commander at MCT, Marine Combat Training Battalion, School of Infantry East. And I was one of the very first female officers. You know, so I technically had an infantry officer billet, which really like ruffled the guys who were there, who were infantry officers. But
my beloved Corps is getting leaked.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of funny. And so they had all these attitudes and like even more, I would argue, arrogance around like, what is she doing here? And so most of my Marines were infantry Marines who had never worked with women before. This is not surprising because why would they have? There were no women in the infantry and no women at Paris Island or, you know, out west. And so I was the first female officer they'd worked with or for, right? And certainly the enlisted Marines, the women who were being integrated into those instructor roles were the first women they'd worked with. And we were doing the job. And some of the women were twice as fit as the guys. And like none of this had, you know, surprised me, but what was kind of, it was always interesting to see the reactions. Oh, she can do it. Oh, she's good. And then of course, the healthy competition that was fostered. Like, oh, you know, I can't let her do this job better than me, right? So I got to show up and work twice as hard now too, right? So all of that is good as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, just being told like, oh, you're as good as any infantry officer I've worked for, ma'am, you know, which is, okay, I'll take that as a compliment.
It's a backhanded compliment.
Exactly.
I would get that. She's great for a female Marine was a thing that I got. Exactly. I would hear people say, and I'm like, oh,
Yeah, I'm sure. And so we, you know, every now and then would get assigned a staff NCO or an officer who'd come back from the fleet and was now doing, you know, a B billet at the School of Infantry. And, you know, I had a couple who were just, they just did not need to be there. They did not understand why women were in these roles, why they were, you know, why I was someone they had to take orders from. And I had a lieutenant, you know, XO, who's junior to me, right? And who just, he wreaked havoc in the company. He refused to respect me. He made it known, right? It's one thing to have these backwards opinions, but then to actually verbalize them out loud to other Marines who are taking orders from me and other women, right? It's dysfunctional. It tears a unit apart. And these guys were actually loyal to me,
especially the audacity as a boot lieutenant.
It was amazing.
What do you know, dude?
It was amazing. And so he was sexually harassing the NCOs in the unit. And these were women who were, they were phenomenal. They were types of women who the infantry guys were saying, oh, you know, she should go to squad leader's course, you know, like she could actually do this, right? Mm-hmm. And Like, they had no reason to say that other than that they were really freaking impressed. They had never met women like this. Of course, they'd never met, they've never worked with women, period, right? But it was, so it was delightful to hear that, but then to have this lieutenant, like, running amok, right, and ripping things apart. And so when, like, the worst of it happens, and, you know, he was going around spreading rumors that one of my NCOs, female sergeant, had performed oral sex on him, right, among other things. You know, he was talking about female students. So these are like brand new Marines from Paris Island also. I was talking about their body parts, all of this, just out loud, right? Wow. These are like 18-year-old girls, right? It like, that was it. For me, I was like, when that came to me, my first sergeant told me, I was like, I'm taking care of this. So I told the battalion commander. I thought, oh, my battalion commander will take care of this. Surely, he'll take care of this. He'll get rid of the lieutenant. Like, this was egregious, babe.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as we all know, you know, the rumor mill in the Marine Corps, like, it works fast, right? Everybody knew that the lieutenant was doing this, like, within hours, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody in the battalion, like, even outside the company. And so I reported to the battalion commander. I remember this conversation so vividly because I'm sitting down with the lieutenant colonel. I was all, you know, my nerves are going, and he accused my sergeant and the other women of making it up and trying to ruin the lieutenant's career. And he said it with a straight face. Like, he was, you know, like, he was sort of like a wise old man, just sort of, you know, this is just how it is, Captain.
Every battalion commander thinks they're fucking Gandalf too. Oh, God. They know everything.
And this too, it, so many guys would look at this story and say, well, that, I'm sorry, but that's why women shouldn't be in the infantry, you know, or shouldn't be around that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, you are just a giant asshole. Like,
yes. And you know, the answer to that is, and this is where some folks get surprised at this story, is that the guys in my unit, the infantry guys, the enlisted infantry guys, were so supportive of the female NCOs in the unit. They had their backs. So they were pissed off when the lieutenant colonel basically swept these allegations under the rug and did nothing to the lieutenant. And he had, you know, my battalion commander had the audacity to tell me.
How much do you think that's because they appreciated the women, and how much do you think it's because they just hated lieutenants?
You know what? They hated this lieutenant for sure. Yeah. Because it was so obvious what he was trying to do. He's a creepy, creepy human being. You know, and they sensed it. Like, it was a great company before he was assigned to us. To this day, like, they still talk about how awful an officer he was. So it wasn't so much like, oh, you know, crappy little lieutenant, right? I mean, he wasn't just a boot lieutenant. He was a guy with prior enlisted infantry experience.
Oh, okay.
He had a lot of years.
Yeah.
And he was just a despicable human being. And now,
my thought is, hey, let's, after the pod ends, let's go smash his mailbox and, you know, maybe leave a turd on the windshield of his car.
Yeah, now, let's dox him. Let's give his real government name.
You have taken, say his full name. No, you have taken a different route. And after getting out, you've decided to work to make changes in the, like, where do you even begin and where do you start?
So, I mean, the first thing was, like, I was pissed off as all hell when I got out, right? And I also didn't quite understand why I was. Like, I wanted to stay in. I was going to definitely deploy overseas in my next unit, right? This is 2004, right? So things were gearing up, and everybody was deploying to Iraq at that time. And so I wanted to stay in. Right. And people were telling me, like, oh, you should, like, with your experience, you know, you'll make waves, you'll, you know, all the opportunities, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I cannot work for one more knucklehead officer.
Woman Marine to graduate from the martial arts instructor training course. That's a big deal.
Awesome experience. And so I got out pissed off, you know, feeling really disengaged and detached from the Marine Corps, but also, like, completely lost up in the civilian world. And over the next couple of years, met other women who had served in the various branches of service, who experienced similar things, oftentimes even worse. You know, women who had experienced rape and assault, harassment, had been kicked out under "don't ask, don't tell," just like a variety of humiliations, right? And awful experiences, and also, you know, also the best of the military. But I was like, okay, so these experiences, these bad experiences, are so common, and yet no one seems to be doing anything about it. Like, why is this still happening? And so we banded together, formed an organization, and hit the hill, hit Washington, D.C., and demanded Congress pay attention. And I think it was, like, the style in which we did it. It was very unapologetic. We didn't kind of, like, just join the other veteran service organizations and kind of, you know, speak deferentially to these elected officials. Like, who needs that? Nothing gets changed, right? And so, you know, channeling the outrage in a very constructive way and saying, this is happening. Like, literally, it's happened to us and the Marines and soldiers that we know. And it's not stopping. These are the examples of sweeping assault and harassment allegations under the rug across the branches of service. It is still happening. We don't need a tail hook, right? Like, this goes back so far, just decades and decades of assault and harassment scandals across every branch of service. You know, it's like, how many survivors need to step forward, right? Mm-hmm. It's still happening, right? Like 10 years later. So, and they paid attention because we weren't, we were speaking for ourselves, right? Oftentimes I think in veterans organizing, there aren't women taking the lead because in the larger organizations, these are older organizations, right? Going back as far as World War II, World War I, and there isn't a culture of understanding that all voices matter. All voices, right? We are a different military today. We look different than we did 50, 60, 70 years ago, right?
Unless you're talking about the position of the commandant, looks the same.
Yeah. That will never change, I feel. I'm afraid.
Whenever you're going through, have you seen any changes like in the era of Me Too and things becoming a lot more publicized? Have you seen any positive changes, like things are trending in the right direction?
Yeah, so I'd say there are two major changes. I mean, maybe three, but I mean, the first is that we brought this attention to, and national attention, even international attention, to sexual violence in the military. Like, it happens. And the first step in making change is acknowledging that something is happening, that there is a crisis here. It's not a new crisis, like I'm saying, but the military leadership and Washington have effectively denied that this is happening for decades. And so for them to now admit it, I remember in the last few months, the last sexual assault report to come out of the Pentagon, even Pentagon officials were like, yep, we're like, we are at a loss. We have no answers, right? Like, this just sucks. That ironically is a success, right?
Yeah.
And they admit how messed up things are. And so as a result, even if there aren't fewer assaults or fewer examples of harassment happening, men and women who are joining the military have a little more consciousness. Moms and dads have a little more consciousness, right? There's a little bit more, there's more education, there's more information out there. So yes, the retaliation against survivors still happens. Yes, sweeping incidents under the rug still happens, but there are more resources available, right? I think that people feel a little less stigma in terms of reporting, in terms of, okay, nobody in my unit supporting me, but somebody on the outside might support me. Maybe a congressional office is going to get involved and it's going to be on the nightly news.
Or an organization like yours.
An organization like ours, like Service Women's Action Network, you know? And so when the media got involved, right, and congressional officials got involved, we're like, okay, this is it. And it didn't happen on its own, right? The work had to happen from the outside. It needed to involve, like, sort of the holy trinity of the media, right, elected officials, and survivors who were on the outside, who were in a slightly safer space to speak out about their experiences. And it's still happening. I mean, Marines United is still alive and well. This is not a thing of the past, right? So it's just variations on the same theme.
And we've even struggled, like, how much to talk about it on this show, because this show primarily is like jokes, and we tell a lot of porter potty stories. We tell about, like, sitting in the smoke pit. That's kind of what we design our show to be. But I think it's incredibly important to have voices like yours and voices like Kate out there, and have the ability for people just to listen about what's actually going on. It's incredibly important what you're doing, so much so that even though you guys sent us a pre-copy of your book on the ebook, I purchased your book and I think it's supposed to get here tomorrow from Amazon. So you want to plug your book before we let you go, where people can find your book?
Definitely. Can I just say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I feel like it's worth taking a minute. The combat exclusion policy was the other thing that we took to the front. And so I have always believed, you know, when I was in uniform, and definitely when I got out, that there was this link between women being denied an opportunity to have combat assignments and the rampant sexual harassment and assault that happens in the military. It is not rocket science. There's definitely cause and effect there. So the more you prevent women from doing whatever it is the guys are allowed to do legally, the more there'll be a hostile workforce or a hostile work environment. And so we sued the Pentagon to open up the combat, to open up ground combat assignments to women.
What year was that? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, so this was all happening in 2011, 2012. And, you know, the ACLU represented four service women who are still in uniform, which is very brave, right? Like, to sue in uniform and to sue the Secretary of Defense who's, you know, signing your paycheck on some level, right? And so we joined forces with them. And 2-3 months later, Secretary Panetta and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, you know, announced that they were revoking combat exclusion. And it required litigation. It required suing the Pentagon to make that.
Yeah.
Right?
I was in Afghanistan in 2010 on the front lines with an infantry battalion, and halfway through the deployment, and I couldn't, every report I turned in, I couldn't say I was on a patrol. I had to use the term gathering atmospherics, because by law, I wasn't allowed to be on patrols. So even though I was doing all the same things as the infantrymen, I couldn't say that I was doing the same things. And so I wasn't treated as if I was doing the same things. But halfway through that deployment, they actually called us all back to Leatherneck because Congress was fighting over whether or not we were allowed to be doing our job. And then some strings were pulled and we were allowed back out. But so that's crazy to know that, like, that maybe was the start of what was going on. And absolutely, the conversation was really heating up. So thanks, by the way.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, it's unconscionable. And there's so many women who were in that position. And I remember talking to women who, when they came back from Afghanistan and Iraq and were getting out, were then denied VA benefits because folks at VA didn't believe they were attached to these units and doing the work they were doing overseas. And like, when does it end, for God's sake, right?
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there has been a lot of progress. That is progress, right? Now it's like 6-7 years later and women are in the infantry in various places and it's still not being done perfectly. The integration is happening slower than it needs to happen. Like, for example, there's a leaders first policy, which I don't even know if like folks within the military at all ranks know this, but if you're a junior enlisted service woman who now has a combat arms MLS, you can't be assigned to a combat arms unit if there aren't senior enlisted or junior officer women in those units first, right? So it's like this completely backwards mentality. You have to have a woman leading you in order to be a woman in these combat arms units, right? Well, there aren't enough women to hold these positions. There aren't women in the Marines or in the Army for this to happen. So what are you doing to these now these infantry women, right?
Very well crafted there.
Oh, and plan. You know, and you talk about Me Too, the same thing is happening in the civilian workforce where guys are afraid, you know, men in the workforce are afraid to mentor young women who are, you know, coming up in the ranks. No, like, don't be afraid. Do your damn jobs, right? Like,
women or to go out to eat with a coworker.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Like, God, can we just stop already and just get this done? So,
well, I think people like you who are going out of their way to fight for these, for equality and for us to be treated the way we should be treated, has probably already made a huge difference in the lives of a lot of Marines. And so much respect to you. And I'm also very excited to read your book, and it's available where people can get it anywhere. They can,
you can get it at Amazon. It's called Unbecoming, A Memoir of Disobedience. And yeah, it's out in bookstores all over.
I just have to ask too, how did it feel to get the first copy and hold it in your hands?
It was great. I mean, gosh, truthfully, I'm glad it's lighter than I thought. You know, sometimes you just want to read a page turner, right? And yep. People tell me it's a page turner, which is fantastic. But I also don't have time to read a 500-page history book. So it's light, it's readable, it's user friendly.
Well, I just read Of Mice and Men, so hopefully it matches up to that.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time. That interview with Anu was brought to you by our good friends at Kite. Tired of your vape always dying or losing your extra pods? You need Kite, a new portable charger and pod case that's compatible with Juul. Whether you're getting ready for an all-day tailgate or an all-night party, Kite will make sure that you're always charged up. Kite gives your vape up to 3 full charges and holds 3 additional prods. For a limited time, get your Kite for 50% off at kitecharger.com. No code is required. Just visit kitecharger.com. Kite products are not associated nor sponsored by Juul Labs. Round number 4, there are some airmen who are doing some big-time things in Poland. There's some airmen deployed to Poland for a training exercise this month, and they helped a local resident whose van had flipped early Thursday morning outside of Powids.
I would say Powids.
Powids.
Air base.
Anyway.
We have any Polish stoolies, Polish listeners, hit us up with the correct pronunciation. We will make that correction next week. At approximately 6:45 a.m., a Polish driver was involved in an accident near the base. First of all, I'm going to make some notes here along the way. 6:45, they're on their way to work. It's a late day, sleeping in. Seven airmen from the 48th Fighter Wing were on their way to the base when they witnessed an accident, according to U.S. Air Forces Europe's news release. It was a second nature for us to stop and help the driver involved.
I'm going to stop here and say, okay, not only were they late, it wasn't their first nature to stop and assist the driver.
Oh, wow. Good point, Kate.
Sorry, go ahead.
Good point. First nature to stop and help the driver. Some of the airmen immediately went to help the driver while another called emergency services. Once we knew the driver was out of immediate danger, we flipped the vehicle back onto the wheels. So they have this picture of them. There's like 7 dudes on this bongo type van, and they're pushing it over to get it back on its wheels. And it looks like, I'm going to say this because I'm doing a little investigative reporting here, that you probably couldn't get good footing because it was pretty muddy. Like this, the tracks from the tires are all there, look pretty muddy. In my opinion, back me up here, Cons. I'm going to charge these people. I'm going to charge them under the UCMJ for not having good ORM. It is not worth the risk of the vehicle flipping back on top of them to get crushed. Wait for an actual tow truck to come do that. There was no need to go the extra mile. Make sure the driver is okay. You're not there to fucking trip vans. You're there to train.
Chaps, I could not agree with you more. And also, I'll go out on the limb and say this. Like, it was second nature for us to stop. Like, come on. Like, you guys are just running around Poland, just saving people left and right, like a, you know, some sort of superhero group. Knock it off. Jesus.
Okay. You are both giant douchers, may I say. I'm going to go out on a limb and say none of us had ever heard of Powys Air Base, and this would not be on our radar had they not flipped the bongo van. I think it was a much-needed PR move in the end for them to do it. I think good out of their hearts to help the driver, but this secondary step of flipping the van, they knew they were being watched. They knew a sick picture was going to get taken of it, and it was going to Powys Air Force Base on the map.
How happy do you think Air Force East Command, whatever the fuck the letters, they just, it's essentially soup in the Air Force. They just name shit with no end in sight. They just keep going on. How happy do you think, Kate, I want this question to be for you. How happy are the commanders in the Air Force for that region that it wasn't a super fat body? Your thoughts?
Ooh, thank you for asking me that. I think it would have been camouflaged in the early morning light regardless, and they were doing a good thing, chaps.
You're doing amazing, sweeties, over there in Poland. We're very proud of you. Well done to the Air Force, in all seriousness. I'm sure you're going to get like a Distinguished Flying Cross for that. Let's move on.
Bunch of assholes.
That was a good one. Round number 5, the Marines better know all the words to the Marine Corps hymn, which all good Marines do, and they better know it by April 15th because the Commandant's going to officially sign this into order. Not only that, but there's going to be a bunch of changes coming to the new drill and ceremonies manual as well, which, if you don't know this, Cons, whenever Marines are present and our drill and ceremonies take precedence.
I did not know that.
Yeah. If it's a joint services thing, then the Marine Corps ones take precedence.
Why is that?
Because ours are the cleanest and the best.
I feel like they're,
I feel like it's a DOD show because the Air Force guys, whenever I was on Lackland, would get pissed because if any of the Marines showed up, it technically became a joint service thing. And then their first sergeant would have to come get me because I was a senior enlisted leader at the dog school. So I would have to go and help them and like teach them which way to do it because the Marine Corps drill and ceremonies manual takes precedence.
I did not know that. And that's interesting to hear.
And Kate, you'll be glad to hear that one of the things they're getting rid of is the most pointless thing in the history of the drill and ceremonies, which was the stack arms command. Do you remember that one?
Nope. You would be amazed at the shit that I just completely, as soon as just I got out, dumped. I was like, that 10 hours of standing on that pavement in the hot sun, whatever memory that was is gone. But I will say, Marine Corps hymn totally fucks. And I am glad
it's a great song.
It does. So here's the words from the Commandant himself. He said, "It is now directed that Marines present who have served honorably, who are not in formation or part of an actual ceremony or marching in parade or review, who, when they hear the playing of the Marines hymn, will stand at attention, face the music, and sing the words of the hymn." That's what the updated ceremony says.
I got to say, I like that. I think that's great.
Because it always puts you, you know what? It always puts you in a weird position. I went to Boston for an Army National Guards where I gave a little speech there. And because I was a Marine, they gave me the courtesy at the end of their mess night of playing the Marine Corps hymn. Well, there's always some motivator who's there who wants to sing along or sing it out. But deep inside my brain, I know that that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to stand there at attention. So really, Devil Dogs, not after April 15th, but before then, if you were the one singing out, although your motto, you were wrong.
Interesting. Oh, I've been in a couple situations where it's broken out and it gives me like the chills. Like I went to a Marine Corps birthday ball with like all old dudes in Pennsylvania after I got out and they couldn't help it. They all started singing it. And by the end, they were like fucking singing it. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, the Marines. Yeah. I mean,
can you guys both sing it right now? Should we have someone like play
by heart?
Yeah.
All right.
We have fought in every climb and place where we could take a gun. Pull that trigger now. Okay. Anyway.
Honestly, the next line is if the Army and the Navy ever looked on heaven's knees.
No, it's not. It's in the snow of far off northern lands and it's sunny tropic scenes.
Well, I'm saying in the normal, like I think that's our first. That's our first, the nation's first diss track, many people were saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So many people. The haters said that we would never.
It was like a real inadvertent.
We didn't even mention them.
Right. Yeah. No, we're a guard the gates. It's fine. Hey,
real quick, do either of you know, when was that song written?
Oh, I would say off the top of my head, 1835.
I'm going to say it was written in 1942 by Thomas Holcomb.
Yeah, I was going to say it had to have been later just because of the references it makes, right?
Yeah. And the music, too, it was done in 1867. So we've had the tune.
All right. That makes sense.
The lyrics came in much later. So, yeah, the song's itself about 90 years old, the way that we know it.
It was written in 1847 by Jacques Hoffenbach.
Yeah, so like written, meaning the music was written, but the actual lyrics came later. Because they're chaps, they're references of battles and such.
Yeah, update it. How about that, cons? We update it. Just like the Constitution. All right, any save rounds, alibis?
Of course. I got more homework. Now that you guys are talking about the Marine Corps hymn, it triggered in the movie Warrior.
I thought you were gonna say Guardian.
No, I'm just... I won't say that I've given up because I'll never give up anything in my life, but I've put that on pause.
During Lent that cons will not give up anything.
That's right. In the movie Warrior, a part at the end where there's a group of Marines and they sing the hymn and it's actually really good. So
I always like the Army song.
Yeah.
'Cause I'm a creep. I'm a loser. What the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, that one's fucking good.
I don't belong here. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Rusted.
Nicely done.
Take that, idiot.
Last 1 point for Corporal Kate. Way to go, Kate.
Been holding on to that all show.
Whoa. Roasted.
Now that my vokes are all toasted up.
You have any save rounds?
Nope, that's it. I blew my save round. Anyway, all over the pants of this episode.
Yikes. Courtesy of Roman Swipes, by the way. Also, before we go, I forgot to do an ad read, so I'm going to do that now.
Hey, why not?
If you're listening now, you get a special deal. If I would have done it earlier, it would have been.
Just do it at the end, and I'll put it in somewhere else. You can't have the ad read all the way at the end of the episode anyway. I can't put it all the way at the end. It got to be earlier in the episode. They get pissed if you put it at the very end of the episode.
Fine. That's it then. Oh, on Friday, big episode coming on Friday. We have Kristen Beck, who is a Navy SEAL. She straight up said SEAL Team 6, so we can say it this time. We don't have to bleep it out or anything like that. I'm excited to have her. She has been in the news recently because she is an active voice for the military or to the Purple Heart. She is the first real prominent war hero to come out as trans. She's a trans woman. She is unbelievable. Her stories that she shows, that she tells, they're on par with anything Rob O'Neill told us, and some of them are going to straight up take your breath away. Listen to that
episode. Literally.
Yeah.
Because Teaser, she chokes a bitch.
Yeah, she tells us how recently
indeed. She
choked out a real asshole.
So stay tuned.
Sometimes
for
it has to be done.
It does.
Oh, one more thing.
Okay.
Small announcement. I'm knocked up, you guys.
Down the retreat.
April Fools, got your goose.